Welcome to From the Booth, the official podcast sponsored by the International Cinema Program at BYU. I'm Chip Oskerson, co-director of the International Cinema Program, and I'm coming to you from the Satellite International Cinema office in Paris. And joining me today from the home office in Provo is Professor Mark Yamada.
Hello.
It's good to be with you virtually, Mark, if not physically.
That's right.
On the show today, we won't be discussing the films from the kickoff weekend last weekend, except talking about them a little bit in passing. We already discussed them at some length last semester, and we refer you to our archive of podcast episodes to find those discussions. And what we want to do today is to talk a little bit about the films that are going to be coming up next week and some of the series that they're a part of. For your reference, I will put notes about these past episodes in the program notes that you can find and follow online. The films that we're going to be previewing this week are Crazy Rich Asians, an American smash hit from 2018. That's going to be leading off our series on cultures of the Chinese diaspora. Shoplifters by IC favorite director Hirokazu Koreeda, which is also from 2018. A classic film, noir, Double Indemnity from 1944, directed by Billy Wilder. And lastly, Apollo 11, a really interesting documentary edited and produced by Todd Douglas Miller. Before we jump into those previews, though, Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit how the weekend went? And this one of the films that we're showing as part of our kickoff weekend was Mirai, which is going to be important for a series this semester.
Yeah, no, it was a great weekend. We had those two films, Mirai and Transit. Mirai was well attended. It was well attended last year, too. That's why it was one of our encore films. But it's a film, it's the first film in the series, the films of Mamoru Hosoda, who is a up-and-coming director, worked with Ghibli and has kind of earned his own place in Japanese animation now and has his own studio and has a really different style than sometimes we're used to maybe with Ghibli. As we'll see in some of the other films we'll be showing this semester, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time and Wolf Children. He has these really beautiful backgrounds that you'll notice, but his characters tend to be a little bit more abstract, a little bit less animated. And it's in some ways a way for audiences to kind of put themselves in the shoes of the characters. So something to look forward to in his films throughout the semester.
Well, and I think it's exciting, too, to expose our audience to something outside of Ghibli, right? If anyone knows anything about anime in North America, they're probably familiar with the Ghibli studio films.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a lot more there, and this is a great way to branch out a little bit.
It is, and it's a different style, and it's a different themes that are being developed, and so it'll be great, I think, to have three films by one director that we can kind of think about different styles and different ways of looking at animation.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I should say in doing our preview here that I'll do a little plug for our lecture, our Wednesday lectures that are every Wednesday at 5 p.m. None other than Professor Mark Yamada is going to be talking this Wednesday. You're going to be presenting on a couple of these films. And again, one of the films is going to be leading off one of our series for this semester, Crazy Rich Asians. Why don't you tell listeners, Mark, a little bit about what our thought process was in choosing this particular film?
You know, it was just purely to get people to watch. No, I think that... it's deceptively popular in a sense that it was a huge hit and a film that really played widely in the United States. I think that something that people will enjoy about the film is it does have this kind of rom-com, popular kind of narrative structure and characters and a lot of the conventions of rom-coms that you'll notice. But I think it's kind of using the rom-com formula in maybe a different way than it's usually used. And I think it's getting at questions of identity, of what it means to be Chinese American versus Singaporean Chinese, and really looking at kind of the culture that we inherit and the differences in particularly kind of Chinese living in the mainland, living in outside of the mainland in different parts of the world and how their culture is informed not only by, their traditional Chinese culture, but also kind of the American culture or Southeast Asian culture. So I think that'll be kind of interesting to look at through this film.
I think that one of the things that was really interesting to me is the whole discussion that surrounded this film when it came out in the United States. You mentioned this representation of Asian Americanness. This is what, you know, one of the blind spots, so to speak, of mainstream Hollywood film in the United States has been representation of minorities.
Yeah,
and you know, there's been lots of controversies that have kind of picked this up, but you can't name too many lead Asian American actors or actresses, right? That get to kind of carry their own role. And this is something that caught people's attention, is that this film was able to do that in a way that was, showing Asian Americans in an entirely different light, not the sidekick, not the comic relief, not the, you know.
Yeah. And I think,
I think that's kind of interesting.
We're kind of conditioned by, you know, media to see ethnic minorities in certain ways. And I think in some ways, you know, Asian American women or Asian women are getting a little bit more of complexity and complex roles. I think lagging behind that are Asian men. And so you get a little bit of a different side of Asian men in this film, a little bit of a different depiction of them. And in some ways it kind of connects with another film that we'll be showing in this series, which is Enter the Dragon by Bruce Lee, and kind of seeing kind of the charisma and the stage presence that Bruce Lee has had as a leading man in film is not something that we're used to seeing a lot. And so that'll be interesting to tie those films together.
Well, and I don't think I had fully appreciated how kind of path-breaking Bruce Lee was, right? In kind of opening up the doors for someone, you know, like him coming to Hollywood, who was not white, who was not part of this kind of mainstream culture, you know, to be able to break through. That was a pretty significant step. And I think that the documentary we'll be showing together with Enter the Dragon really helps to make some of the connections between the representations of Asian Americans and the representation of African Americans.
Right.
That gets into some other things that we'll be seeing this semester too. But, I was not aware that there was the kind of devotion and following of Bruce Lee among African Americans, precisely because they a lot of people in those communities kind of identified with where he was coming from and what he was trying to accomplish.
Right. No, for sure. And I think it's interesting how these two series, The Cultures of Chinese Diaspora and Our Representations of Race, intersect in this way. And we'll be able to see some kind of crossovers in that way between the Bruce Lee films and Crazy Rich Asians, and also with representations of African-American characters and Black culture that we'll be seeing in the semester as well.
Yeah, I think this is going to tie together really well, I hope. And as well, it's a good example of how something that is more mainstream has, you know, and in some ways, like you're saying, it's a rom-com. It's not on all levels, you know, a deep film the way that Tarkovsky films are obviously meditative and force you to really kind of think through things. It's not that. Right. And yet there's a kind of richness to this film that we need to be able to talk about and we need to be able to explore.
Yeah, no, that's for sure.
So your lecture this week, I think, is interesting how you're framing this, because you're riffing off the idea of crazy rich Asians, but you're talking about poverty, actually.
Right. Yeah. A different kind of way of looking at maybe kind of that hyper-capitalist, materialistic Asian stereotype that we have that, unfortunately, Crazy Rich Asians is kind of reinforcing a little bit, even as it challenges other stereotypes. But it allows us to look at a film by a director that we often feature at international cinema, Hirokazu Koreeda, who's directed films like Father Like Son, which I think we showed a few years ago. A director who's pretty well known at international.
The Third Murder we showed a semester or two ago.
That's right. The murder, the courtroom drama. And this is a director who in some ways has some, is received in interesting ways in his homeland. It's interesting that the Prime Minister of Japan actually doesn't like his films. And I think maybe one of the reasons, yeah, particularly the film and the film we're talking about, of course, is Shoplifters, which won the Cannes Film Festival a few years ago, the grand prize there. And it was interesting because when it did win, Prime Minister Abe is usually very congratulatory of you know, Japanese people who win these kind of international awards, did not say anything to Koreeda. And in fact, I think had some interviews where he criticized the film. And I think what's going on here is that there's a criticism of really how it depicts Japanese in a very different light than they're often be depicted as this, you know, as part of this kind of materialistic high growth economy of the 1980s and 1990s. You're seeing a very different way of life and a very different view of the family than is often kind of depicted. And so it's interesting to see how this film really counterbalances Crazy Rich Asians as a different way of looking at kind of socioeconomic status in Asia, and maybe different worldviews and views of kind of where Asia is going in the future in terms of economics and social issues. So it'll be interesting to match these films together. Shoplifters isn't part of any series per se, but it does provide an interesting kind of counterbalance to this film. So I think it'll be good to show it with Crazy Rich Asians as a set that we'll be doing this week.
Well, unlike Prime Minister Abe, I'm a big fan of Koreeda. I really think that he gets at humanity in a really interesting way. And in this feature particularly, the way that he kind of peels back, as you're saying, these layers of consumerism that we kind of surround ourselves with, and in portraying a family and really getting us to think about what a family is at its core, because this is a very untraditional family. It does have a mother and a father, but that's about the extent of it. Their relationship is different than typical marital relationships in a lot of ways. Yeah. The relationships between brothers and sisters that are not biological brothers and sisters is also very interesting. But I came away with a lot of thoughts about what I could do to be a better family member, you know, myself.
Yeah, interesting.
And I think that this is so typical that he really likes to, you know, to pick at some of the assumptions that we make about what makes us, whether we're Japanese or American or whatever. I mean, I think it translates very well across national borders, even if he's not necessarily a prophet in his own land in this case.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, another of the films that we're going to be showing this week that is the first in a series is Double Indemnity. And a lot of our listeners to the podcast will be familiar with this classic film from 1944, starring Fred McMurray in a serious role. It also has Barbara Stanwyck, who's playing kind of a femme fatale as well. This is one of the classic film noirs. And I think that one of the things that we hope to get at with this series is the way that noir travels across borders. And of course, the very term film noir is coming from French. And what's interesting about these films is that it's a genre or a style, depending on how you want to define it, that really grows out of German expressionism. After the First World War, you get people like Fritz Lang who begin to experiment with these, you know, kind of a very different kind of style, not afraid of kind of darkness and shadow and using those in creative sorts of ways. And a lot of these film directors, people like Billy Wilder, in fact, find their way into Hollywood as they are being persecuted in various ways, needing to get out of Germany in the 1930s. And they come to Hollywood and they bring a lot of these ideas. They start making these films. And a lot of the initial films that we refer to as noir nowadays were not that they did not have high artistic kind of cachet or value, that it really took the French critics watching these and telling America that there's really something interesting going on here, this comment on modernity, different kinds of characters that are broken, that are flawed. They don't match the kind of the stereotypes that were being put out by classical Hollywood at the time. And this really resonates with audiences, I think, because of the kinds of moral ambiguity that war always brings. Moving into World War II, noir really takes off. And so you get characters who are alcoholics, who are themselves a little bit corrupt, who are trying to solve crimes where there's not always a clear right and wrong. And this, you know, this becomes this genre that we talk about. Well, since that time, since the mid-20th century, this has then been re-exported from the United States. So it starts in Europe, comes to the United States, and now you have to talk about it as a kind of global phenomenon. And we're going to be seeing films from all over the world during this series. We'll see some early films from Germany, for example, but then we're going to be showing films like, we're going to see a couple episodes from a a Nordic television series, The Bridge, which is a really good example of Nordic noir, which is a kind of an established genre now. We're going to see a French film, Panique, from the 1950s, one of these examples of the re-exported version, as well as others like Mildred Pierce. This is a Hollywood film from 1945, and really a film that in every way is noir, but when it first came out, probably wouldn't, well, it wasn't called that. It didn't have that name yet, but we look back now and we see all of those elements present in this melodrama about a mother and a daughter, you know, kind of struggle.
Yeah.
So these films always really, there's a real appeal to me. I think in the post 9/11 world that there's a way that noir has been kind of new life has been breathed into it, in that we find ourselves dealing with similarly morally complicated situations. And Billy Wilder is a really great place to start. He's such a good, he helped to work on the script, and it's a very tortured production history to get the script and everything. But Billy Wilder is so good with dialogue. And I think that, you know, people who haven't seen this before are really going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm glad we're starting with Double Indemnity, because it just feels like this classic noir. I mean, everything is noir about it. I mean, the lighting and the dialogue and, you know, the plot and the characters. So really great one to start with.
Yeah. Well, the last film that we have to preview today is Apollo 11. And this film really knocked my socks off, I have to say, when I first saw it. It was a real hit at Sundance. I remember you saw it at Sundance, yeah. Mark, and came back talking about it in glowing terms.
Right.
And I think I felt a little bit skeptical at first. It's like, no, haven't I kind of seen this before, you know, kind of thing. No, I hadn't seen this before.
No. And what I like about it is that it's so different from the feature film, The First Man, you know, that came out, which is, people complained about being kind of claustrophobic and, you know, the cinematography of it. But this film is just wide open, especially the opening shot where you're seeing kind of the spaceship delivered, right?
The launch,
the rockets, rather, delivered to the launching pad. I mean, it's just, it's amazing cinematography. Yeah.
Yeah. For our listeners who don't know much about the background of this documentary, it of course is about the Apollo 11 mission, and which celebrated its 50th anniversary this last summer. And this was put together. I mean, the real master genius, I think, in making this film was the editor.
Right.
The editor and the sound designer both. I mean, it is so well put together. They went back and they found all this original footage, and in some cases, footage that had never been released to the public, footage that was in 70mm. And so you're watching these images and they look like they were filmed yesterday.
Yeah.
They're so crisp and so clear and so well done. And they're edited together so that you basically never need a contemporary voiceover. They go back and they get TV radio transmissions from the time to narrate every step of what's going on.
Right.
And you're with them every part of the action. And I do have to say that, you know, for the IC goers who feel like, oh, I maybe saw this in another, you know, venue. I know that CNN maybe played it around the time of the anniversary.
It's you got to
see it on the big screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a totally different experience. And with the sound system that's in 250 of the Kimball Tower,
it's great. Yeah.
That Saturn V rocket takes off, and I got to say, it's something else.
Yeah. And we'll be having a great post-screening discussion on Saturday with Mike Joner from Physics, who has some inside knowledge into kind of the whole space mission and some of the operations behind it. So that'll be really great to hear from him on Saturday.
That's right. Well, thank you for being part of our discussion today on From the Booth. We'll hope you'll join us next week as we talk about these films that we've previewed today, and we'll be previewing the films that will be coming up the following week. And we'll give you a little bit of context for these films, give you a few things to think about. We promise that as we preview films that we'll avoid spoilers, but as we talk about the films next week, we'll discuss unrestrained. This semester, we're going to be recording the podcast this way from two different locations. We hope that you'll bear with any technical difficulties that we might need to encounter, but we're looking forward to all the good things that will be coming our way. You can see a list of all the films that we'll be showing this semester, as well as an archive of past semesters at ic.byu.edu. From the Booth is produced by the International Cinema Program, and we're thankful for the support that we get from the BYU College of Humanities. We, the hosts of this podcast, are solely responsible for the opinions and ideas expressed here, and we thank our sound engineer, Joseph Hegstrom Pratt, as well as the staff at BYU for all their work in helping to make this podcast possible. We hope that we'll see you soon in 250 of the Kimball Tower. Thanks for being here, Mark.
Thank you very much. See you next time.